Welcome to Build Peace Radio 2025.
Hi, I'm Anna Isles, a futurist based in Hong Kong. I met some of you at last year's Build Peace in Manila and would really have loved to join you again this year. I want to share with you here a couple of poems I've written, both unpublished, that say something of my experience of the difficulties of peace building at quite a personal level. The first is called Healer. It's really about the do no harm principle and our vulnerability when facing even those with the best intentions. Healer. We come to our mats, misaligned spines, strained eye sockets, time-drawn skins, unhinged sit bones, sunken breaths, splayed in expectation for someone, you, healer, to undo and redo our stacks in less fragile formation. And you perch, healer, behind your singing bowls, oracle decks, essential oils, ready to trawl your net through our silty flow, cast for unpolished pearls, plug our leaking souls. Tread our waters with care. Throw back any immaturities. And the second one is called Encounter at Low Tide. It's a poem about fragile mental health and really about how little we know and can know about someone in a single encounter or even multiple light encounters. Encounter at low tide. Her sweat-pocked, sun-roast skin sprouts silver tendrils, calls for relief as we cross paths by chance at low light, low tide. I sank shin deep in that cockle-studded silt, she says, eyes glistening with salt. Once I found her dancing tango alone in the squash court, reaching out, drawing back, a tide without a shore. Then a call to say she's sleeping in someone's sauna, and do I know her? Can I reach out? I imagine her waxen head melting over wood and look over my shoulder, a receding Eurydice.
The topic of today for the full day, between deterrence and non-violence. After the end of the Cold War, we entered this era of the liberal peace. The number of armed conflicts was diminishing. The number of casualties in armed conflict was diminishing. The number of peace agreements was incrementing to a level where the normal way of terminating an armed conflict was through a peace agreement. These were the times of the rule-based order where we believed, where the multilateral system was there to ensure the respect of human rights, international humanitarian law, international law, democracy. So we had the institutions who were there to ensure to make this possible. And it is quite recent that we have had, among others, two big game changers, which are the ones we will be addressing today. First one, Russia invades Ukraine. And of course, more and more explicitly, Israel government is suggesting the annexation of the Palestinian territories. But what is significant in this context in Europe, that it's the first time since Second World War that a war of aggression and annexation happens. And the second one, very recent, still this year, Trump. So many things have happened already. But obviously this is a terrible game changer. International law, if that was still something what was relevant, we know very well that's not relevant for him, for this administration. It's all about power. It's all about money. So under these circumstances for a peace community like the ones in this room, this creates challenges and difficult questions. Because when we talk about security, we love to talk about human security, about community security, about environmental security, about feminist security. But what's our standpoint, what's our line of argument when it comes to military security?
When the full-scale invasion started, generally, I have never thought about myself as a human rights defender. I worked in culture, in media, in theater. But when the full-scale war started, we understand that there are not so many of us who are ready to do something and to do what we are believing in. Like that, 80% of Ukrainian army were civilian 3 years ago. They were artists, they were journalists, writers, like Hemingway, but in their own country. So they felt out of this war all this time. They felt like it's ruining them. They felt like it's not their job to kill people, but Ukraine is the only homeland they can ever have. So they decided to risk everything to protect it. Unfortunately, to end the war is a privilege of aggressor. Everything we can do, we can continue to fight back and try to protect ourselves.
Y por eso cuando hablemos del tema del militarismo y del tema de la guerra, ya decían algunos políticos franceses al acabar la Segunda Guerra Mundial que la guerra era algo muy peligroso para dejarlo en manos de los militares. Ahora habría que decir que la guerra es algo muy peligroso para dejarla en manos de ciertos políticos o de gente que utiliza la guerra o que utiliza el rearme como un estímulo de la economía. Los militares tendrían que adoptar esa misma postura, ser, como conocedores que son de la guerra, tratar de prevenirla y tratar de evitarla.
And that's quite interesting because each time I came home as a guest, I feel like disadapted to the war. I feel disadapted to the thought that someone is constantly trying to kill us. And the thought really surprised me once again and once again. To the thought that nothing is going to end tomorrow or in the nearest future.
Alguien dice que las guerras no terminan hasta que no lo deciden sus patrocinadores. Y alguien ha decidido ahora que han conseguido ya sus intereses. Probablemente alguien está pensando en cómo ha cambiado el mercado de la energía, cómo ha conseguido que todos los países incrementen su gasto en armamento para favorecer al complejo militar industrial. Alguien está pensando ya en el negocio de la reconstrucción y ahí por eso pongo lo que es la hipocresía. Y pienso que eso, y lo digo como militar, es terrible que se utilice la guerra como estímulo de la economía o como estímulo de favorecer unos intereses particulares.
I really like the idea about preventing war. I think it might work better. Like it has less consequences to get. But what we can afford together, and I think it can be like not additional, but one more part of future security is justice. So when you hear that Ukraine is taking in weapons, and you should understand that it's not only about fight Russia on the front line, it's also about defending civilians, people in peaceful cities.
In my country, Switzerland, we've just increased military spending by a lot, and we're reducing social spending. It creates tension all over. Is that really a good calculation that is made about like that it's actually boosting the economy? Because I don't think it is.
And I really struggle. I would love to agree with Julio and say that security is just about being safe and digital Europe, but I understand that when children are being kidnapped, there is other priorities before.
I worked in the US Congress on both the Iraq and the Afghanistan wars, and what I observed, and certainly true today, is that the majority of peace building, conflict resolution, talent and memory is in uniform. It's in the Army and the Marines in the United States. And one reason for that is because of the kind of social cohesion tasks they were given. I watched many hearings where the commanding officers said, this has no military solution. We cannot kill our way out of these dilemmas. And yet here we are today, where the people who have that knowledge in the military are the ones being decapitated by the Trump administration. And it's also very hard to get that knowledge out of people in uniform for professional military reasons and boundaries.
que yo propugno que no hay que asociar a los militares. Hay muchos civiles militaristas. Hay mucha gente que utiliza el militarismo como la manera de solucionar los conflictos. Hay muchos líderes políticos que apuestan por el militarismo y no hay que asociar a los militares. El militarismo es una línea política que apuesta por solucionar los conflictos utilizando el incremento, utilizando la guerra y utilizando el rearme. Y eso hay que evitarlo abriendo el debate de la seguridad. Que la seguridad no es lo que ellos dicen. Yo quiero otro tipo de seguridad, que es la que quiere la ciudadanía. Mirando hacia el futuro, se dice mucho que vivimos en un mundo de incertidumbre y yo creo que hay muchos futuros posibles y esos futuros posibles, como decía Tony Judd, hay que construirlos. Y nos corresponde a la sociedad construir esos futuros posibles que hay más de los que nos quieren señalar.
And I thought he just had a great framing of the issues. Like, one thing that's going to really stick with me is he had sort of said that for all of the green initiatives that Europe had had over the past few years, now it's moving to olive green initiatives, like this increased military spending, increased militarism. And I thought that was really interesting. And then obviously paired with Anastasia, who is in a place where militarism is absolutely essential, and it's not something that they necessarily chose, but deterrence is their only option right now. Like, one thing I thought was really fascinating and important was just bringing companies and capitalism into the question, because we think that this is a fight via governments for our data, but it's sort of not. And they kind of brought in the reality of sort of Elon Musk and Starlink and the major function that that is playing for Ukraine, but also against Gaza, and that that is different across different contexts. And ultimately, that is one man who's deciding that, because companies are not operating under democratic principles.
I'm feeling really good. I love the input, and I also love that it's just such a smooth, sometimes sudden fluctuation through emotions, transfer some of the things that I'm being shared into memes and share that with a broader audience and see how it resonates and have this extra medium to experience this conference together. I'm here really with this concept that memes, that was coined by Richard Dawkins as cultural DNA, and that they are just cultural artifacts that communicate something.
So guys, we're at the river. At museum. Okay.
Yeah. My name is Adán Silva. I'm part of the team of the Besar River Museum. And so today the idea is make a mural with the idea of peace or of art combined. So we are a lot of people help to the artist to complete the mural.
So we have Judy from Kenya.
Say thank you so much. And I think, first of all, this is very, very inspiring and different. And it speaks to the various approaches that we can take when we're embracing pluralism, which is embracing different perspectives, different opinions for more and strengthened peace, advanced engagements within our communities and the world in general. So having and being part of Build Peace 2025 has been very informative learning, and also getting to experience and take part in this mural at the River Museum is very good.
Hi, I think art is a very unique way of expressing yourself, whether it's your emotions, whether it's a message you're putting across, and it just helps put a voice into visuals, yeah, which I think it's also a way of releasing anything you may have and just relaxing the mind and all that, yeah. So,
hello, I'm Carmen. I'm from Santa Coloma de Gramenet, and I'm working in the city council. And I'm very happy to be here because ICIP and BILAB they choose Santa Coloma de Gramenet, or a small city near Barcelona, to do BILAB. Build Peace conference. So, well, I'm here working all the weekend with all of you, and I hope you enjoy my city. This river, when I was a child, wasn't really nice. So for me, it's exciting to be here with a lot of people around the world painting. It's like, wow, my grandma is not here. I'm sure she will be really happy to see this.
Okay, first of all, I have to say that it's very nice to be outside. For the past, 48 hours, we've been mostly indoors. I mean, it's a beautiful place, La Ciba, but I think it's refreshing to be out, especially in this place. I was really happy to hear about the woman from the City Council of Santa Coloma and how she is sharing her joy on sharing this part of her town that a couple of decades ago was not a nice place. Now how is people is coming together, and I think that both the projects of graffiti and the opportunity to have a collaborative painting is a great experience. And you can see, like, being outside with the mural and everything, it's very joyful. Like, I can see that people is very happy. In general, in the conference, people is very happy, but
a lot of people coming together, people sharing ideas, people being able to work on projects together like this one. And just learning the different cultures and how they approach conflict and how they address it. So that's a lot. And happy just to continue learning.
Hi, my name is Maria Fernanda. I am Colombian. This is not the first time that I've seen how changing the urbanism of a sector is improving actually the life of the inhabitants. Back in Colombia, I worked for the city hall, and then we used to paint many sectors to build a sense of trust, of confidence, and then this is one of those examples that you can see here in Santa Coloma. So super happy to be part of this project, and then put some paint on my side to make this place more beautiful.
We're watching the painting, and we're doing some other piece building over a cup of coffee, hopefully. So I think that's a great way to share.
Me encanta estar aquí porque el Besós era un lugar, un río contaminado, alejado de las personas, y de repente veo un montón de gente aquí pintando y me emociona como ver tanta gente de tantos países con sus proyectos, sus ilusiones, sus sueños. Y compartir esto con ustedes y sobre todo con un micrófono, que me encantan los micrófonos, me encanta el aparato que llevas, me encanta que es invierno y nos está haciendo un sol delicioso.
Molt bé, doncs estem aquí a Radio Build Peace. Jo sóc el Pol Alberti, sóc el tècnic en alternatives de seguretat de l'ICIP, una de les entitats que ha organitzat aquesta conferència juntament amb Build Up. I aquí tinc a la meva companya, la Núria Nadal, que, Núria, tu has estat present en aquesta conferència aquests últims dies. Com t'has sentit? Què t'ha semblat a la conferència, al CAIR, a l'organització?
Moltes gràcies, Pol. La veritat és que és un honor formar part de l'organització. Som molta gent d'arreu del món, amb moltes energies diverses, cultures diverses, propòsits diversos, i em sembla molt, molt interessant. És xulo veure les energies de cadascú, no? I veure els interessos de cadascú, també com cadascú drena la pau i els interessos de la seva manera. I Pol, m'encantaria saber, tu, per exemple, quin era el teu objectiu? És que pot ser una entrevista col·lectiva, no? Quin ha sigut el teu objectiu principal en l'assistència d'aquesta conferència?
Doncs molt bona pregunta, Núria. El meu objectiu principal ha sigut, entre d'altres, crear sinergies amb diferents col·lectius que tinguin una perspectiva de la pau, de la seguretat comunitària. Ara mateix, just ara m'agafes que sortim d'un workshop que hem atès amb el nostre estimat president, en Xavier, sobre seguretat comunitària i processos de construcció d'alternatives de seguretat a Llatinoamèrica, en la qual ell ha fet aportacions molt, molt interessants. Xavier, voldries dir algunes paraules sobre la conferència sobre com t'has sentit en aquests últims dies de conferència?
I am very happy, perquè la conferència està resultant molt bé i realment estem aprenent molt.
Enviamos un grande saludo a todas las personas que nos están escuchando, the people who is...
Muchas gracias por estar aquí. Thank you so much for listening to us. It is as if you are here. Thank you for being with us. Yes. Vale.
My name is Zoya, and we are engaging a somatic practice and creative writing exercise called How the Body Understands Time Has Always Been a Ritual. I think this is a practice to work with the continuity of time rather than getting stuck in feelings of loss and grief. And it's a way to use breath, visualization, and imagination to move the uncomfortable feelings that we encounter when we lose someone we love. Or maybe we are also emerging as another layer of self. This is also something that can be used when we are mourning loss of self, to embrace what's new, what's coming in to the next stage.
Thank you so much for joining us for this closing session. I don't know about you all, but I am quite tired. Yay! Okay, good. I'm quite tired, but I'm also very, very energized by a lot of the conversations, and very much looking forward to our last conversation today. So in today's theme, between deterrence and nonviolence, we've done the ways to reflect which we understand peace and security, from pacifism and nonviolence to deterrence and the perceived need for military security. This panel looks at a very specific dilemma. We've called it the dilemma of the tech panopticon. Maybe that means something to you, maybe it doesn't, but I think what it comes down to is that new technologies are controlling public space through the use of surveillance in the name of safety. And at the same time, civilians are using technology to resist and reclaim who surveils in the name of accountability. They're also using their lives and their experiences to resist and to reclaim.
So at the beginning of our contact of our people, there's been conflict, and which also created an international border to divide our homelands into two countries. The two countries are now creating militarization along the border, which, so it's continuous, you know. It was traumatic for me to be here in Spain. You know, the tormentors of my people came from here. Peace is always in our minds and in our hearts, and that if we are all here together to talk about building peace, that I think that is a critical point of humanity to begin in that discussion, and that's why I'm here today.
In today's age, geospatial information has now been paired with how we are using apps, how we were, you know, obligatory systems of inscription that have been imposed by immigration officers, specifically in Europe, but the world over. And this is kind of creating a system in which the kind of pairing of this data is creating a new regime in which geospatial data describes not only where we are and when we are, but who we are. We've been seeing something that's kind of quite different, or at least unique in some ways, is the use of surveillance technologies and geospatial data to precisely unwitness events or remove the presence of governmental officials from acts of state violence.
It would be a mistake not to start this conversation without saying that any talks about technology need to acknowledge that this is about power, this is about perpetrating structures of power, like from the north towards the global majority. And a lot of this conversation is really about, you know, benefiting certain groups of people. Surveillance nowadays is ambient, it's everywhere. Think smart cities, think facial recognition, license plate readers, everything. Our phones, computers, home devices, all of it. It's ambient, it's everywhere.
So that impacts our people greatly, you know. So we're looking at resistance in a way that we've always resisted, is to remain who we are, trying to strengthen our cultural way of life and survive.
As peace building is often about the endeavor of building a legitimate public authority which citizens can trust, and I worry with this discussion that it moves people towards, we don't trust government and we don't trust tech, trust nothing. How do we strike that balance, and trust in legitimate public authority should be fostered and not undermined?
But I think it's really trying to strike a balance in terms of like introducing safeguards, even though they are minimal, but there needs to be safeguards towards the use of facial recognition and biometric, you know, data collection, or safeguards towards the state activities in terms of processing data and to what, you know, levels of sensitive personal data they can have access to.
I think sometimes we're kind of almost selling ourselves more as, you know, it's difficult to get funding sometimes for these type of projects legitimately in a social science space, but then if, all of a sudden, if it's an art exhibition, that kind of work becomes somewhat valid, or it's treated in a less serious, less kind of volatile way. You know, there's a more kind of, that from a governmental perspective, there's this kind of, oh, you must fund the arts, and the arts is going to be reactionary, and this is, you know, this is a somewhat kind of assumed modus operandi. So I think we kind of work a little bit in that space of trying to co-opt a little bit an approach to the creative arts, and then kind of try and like worm our way back into sort of legal fora and spaces of kind of more legitimate accountability in the eyes of the government.
And as far as the strength of it's a matter of survival, I guess. It's really a matter of survival for my people that we continue to advocate for our rights, cultural rights and human rights. Although, you know, that there's so many violations against our people and all indigenous people, not just in the United States, but all over the world. And just being here even inspires me, you know, to what I can bring home and say, these women that I met, you know, were so strong, you know, in the pursuit of peace for the world. And that gives me strength.